You're listening to a special podcast produced by UMFM 101.5 in partnership with the Winnipeg Folk Festival, running Thursday, July 11th through Sunday, July 14th at picturesque Birds Hill Park. Winnipeg Folk Festival is a celebration of people and music that has been one of North America's premier outdoor music festivals for over 40 years. I'm Michael Elves, host of Thank God It's Free Range, and this episode spotlights Shane Ghostkeeper. While he's known for an experimental art rock group that performs under his last name, Shane Ghostkeeper recently released Songs for My People, a country record. He'll be performing at Shady Grove on Sunday, July 14th at 1:30 p.m. For the full lineup, a complete list of set times, to purchase tickets, and for more information on the Winnipeg Folk Festival, visit winnipegfolkfestival.ca. A sun beam reveals itself for me to walk across, yeah. Yeah, a sun beam reveals itself for me to walk across, yeah. Oh, but I carry these spiritual debts like a sack of rocks, yeah. And now the smoke from your smudge will hold my hand across, yeah. Are you at peace? Well, I don't know, I suppose so, but babe, without you, I wouldn't know my own place. Stick around here and haunt you. You don't mind, do you? By the creek, drop a leash for me to walk upon, yeah. Yeah, I see them trees by the creek, drop a leash for me to walk upon, yeah. And now I know that was you praying, keep these moccasins clean as a whistle as you made them for me to meet my maker, gonna make you proud. All right, well, coming to Winnipeg to play Birds Hill Park's Winnipeg Folk Festival, Shane Ghostkeeper. You may know the name, his band, Ghostkeeper, but this is a little something different. Shane Ghostkeeper, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Really looking forward to the Folk Fest.
Happy to have you on, and happy to have you come into Folk Fest. So I want to talk, because you've had a band for many years, lots of records under your belt. The most recent record under your own name, something a little different, and I'm curious kind of the decision that led you to that.
It's been a long time coming. I've been wanting to do, as the title suggests, songs for my people, my folks up north in the Métis settlements and communities of Paddle Prairie and Fort Vermilion and Rocky Lane and the town of High Level, where I was raised and educated. I was well steeped in an atmosphere of good old classic country music and old time gospel from my grandmother. So I've always had this request, perhaps, or pressure from my people to make country music, because that was pretty much the first type of music and songs that I was learning for the campfires, for the family gatherings, for the get-togethers, parties. So everyone has been kind of patiently waiting for me to go down that route that I was raised on. And so finally, with the release of our latest multidimensional culture, I had the opportunity, because it did pretty well for us, and we got out on Victory Pool, and I started getting more time to spend on music, and found myself able to commit some time to this long overdue project that I've been dreaming about for a long time.
So this is the kind of music that you like first learned to play music with?
Yeah, well, I wasn't exactly learning country music. I was just doing some, you know, open chord covers at campfires as my mom and my dad or my grandparents requested, you know, like their favorites and my favorites that I grew up. Like my grandpa and I spent so much time together. He had a huge hand in raising me. And I was always out at the farm with him in Rocky Lane, this farming community, just a 20-minute drive from the town of High Level. So he'd pick me up on Friday after school and take me and my little sister out on the farm for the whole entire weekend. There's no electricity, no running water. So I learned a lot of like homesteading and country living. And he would always have Hank Williams Sr. on cassette tape. And we would sing along to that for hours on our drives, as well as Johnny Horton and all those old classics.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, so that's the first music you're hearing or you're exposed to.
Right. Country. Yeah.
What leads you to the rock end of the spectrum in terms of when you become a songwriter? Like, was it kind of like a rebellion or like a push away from kind of the stuff that you were raised on?
You know what? I suppose I've always been somewhat of a rebel. I mean, I was never getting into trouble or anything like that, but I was always rebelling against anything that was somewhat institutional or over popular. So I began searching for music when I got my first guitar when I was 16. And that's when I really started to search. Started off with the old blues greats like Robert Johnson and Son House. And then that led me into Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin. And then the Beatles, psychedelia. And then from there, basically right around when I met Sarah, who was already a practicing artist, and living abroad in various cities like Victoria. I think that's where she went. Yeah, that's where she went to high school. So she was exposed to this underground music scene that I had no idea of, because I was up in High Level and only able to, you know, get my hands on basically corporate Bush music, like the old classics and the music of the day on corporate radio. So when I met her, she started exposing me to this amazing, incredible underground scene, starting with just less rare stuff like the Velvet Underground and that sort of thing, and Elliott Smith and Pavement blew my mind. And then so I think what captured me most about that sort of environment was the ability to explore in a unique way that had nothing to do with what was going on corporate radio. So that was liberating for me, especially before I even had proper songs. That was like, oh, I can make songs like this, even though I can't sing like Robert Plant or play guitar like Jimi Hendrix. So then that's kind of how I went down that artistic avenue.
It opened you up to the possibilities of like what you could do rather than like what other people were doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was liberating. And that really suited my own personal mantra. I was always the one that I was the one kid in my family that refused to go to church to do the Sunday school Catholic thing where you end up so that you can eat the bread and drink the wine during church. So mm-hmm. I was, and I still attend because I, you know, religion is a, and Christianity is a big part of my immediate family, my aunties and uncles and my grandparents. But for weddings and funerals, and I would always be the one at Christmas that sat back, the lone person, while everyone lined up to get their bread and wine. So you're right. I was always rebellious to the norm.
Did that steal you as a songwriter? Like, did you find like kind of being at a remove, like being the one at these functions, kind of like sitting back, as you said, like, does that give you a perspective as a songwriter?
Yeah. You know what? I suppose I never even looked at it that way. Yeah. It does make me more of a, gives me an observational platform, I suppose. Yeah. Sitting back and seeing people and how they're behaving and how they're acting and reacting to one another and interacting. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I've always been kind of just holding back so that I could observe. It's a good perspective.
How intentional are you as a songwriter? Like, do you sit down and be like, I'm going to write a song? Or are you kind of like something comes to you and then you're like, I just want to explore this and figure it out? And what is it that's kind of in my head?
Somewhat. But actually, music has pretty much always been since I was 16 when my dad got me my first pawn shop guitar and amp. Because I was going through a rough time at that age. I was living in Edmonton, I think. I was off playing hockey from my home starting at 14. So I went to 5 different high schools and I was really depressed and antisocial. So my dad showed up one day and was like, hey, your mom says you're not making any friends, so I brought you a guitar. And I just got into it and it became my solace, my spirituality, my spiritual practice, my mental health practice. So I'm always playing every day, noodling around with melodies. And typically a song comes to me first through a guitar composition and melodies. And then I try to pinpoint what that vibe and what these feelings and these melodies and these guitar compositions are actually a sincere feeling coming from me. And there's a story there that it was conceived from. So then I try to find what that song is in words.
Was that process the same for Songs for My People, or did that change at all because of the like style of music and like the fact that you were doing this one for your aunties and uncles?
Yeah, totally. You're right. Songs for My People, all the songs are pretty much just open chords. I mean, there's a few that I wrote some riffs to, but yeah, you're right. I set out to participate in that genre, and which was extremely different from Ghost Keeper, because with Ghost Keeper, I'm intentionally trying to deliver our audience something unpredictable as much as I can. But with this album, I was trying to participate in using the cliches and the melodies that everyone is familiar with of the genre. So it was totally a different process. And I already did have all of these stories that I did not have to rediscover or find in an abstract way through melodies first. I already had like a huge amount of memories and stories that I cherished of people. So the lyrics were already there and I just put them to chords, basically, and open chords. So yeah, a way different process, much more immediate and immediately satisfying, I suppose.
When the chords are simpler and you're not like kind of pushing yourself sonically or musically, does that mm-hmm. free your brain up in terms of like when you're trying to tell a story lyrically, like to explore some different things you wouldn't do as a songwriter when you are focused on the music?
Yeah. Definitely. And I suppose it was also liberating in its own way, because then I can move forward much quicker with just the intent of the story and the literal story. You know, we often kind of get a little with Ghost Keeper, our lyrics can become abstract and stream of conscious kind of style, you know, like Lou Reed kind of thing. And those are our influences for that. So with this, I was not having to try to be inventive or unpredictable. So it really freed me up to move along, to get it done, to focus on telling the story in a literal way in order to honor my people.
A lot of the same folks from Ghostkeeper and Ghostkeeper Records are on this, but this one is credited as Shane Ghostkeeper Record. What was the decision to like separate this in some way?
Yeah, just to drive it home that this was for my people, and that it was way different sound than the Ghostkeeper thing. So I really wanted separation there, and I wanted to be able to present this as a gift to my people. And Ghostkeeper became this band name, even though it's my last name, but it became its own artistic thing. So it felt more sincere and authentic for me to call this Shane Ghostkeeper. It's my songs for my people. It's not about my artistic agenda in terms of sonic exploration and abstract writing.
You said it was a gift. How was the gift received? What do the aunties and uncles think?
Oh, really well. Everyone is really cherishing it and proud of it and relating to the stories, especially of the folks who have passed on, my grandpa, my uncle, my uncles. It's been well received, and I think I'm gonna keep moving forward with it, keep this project going.
Has it opened you up to a new audience? Like, do you find people who, you know, weren't there for the like angular rock to embrace the country side of things? Like, are you finding new folks gravitating to your music or exploring the back catalog?
Maybe not necessarily exploring the back catalog, but people, there's a lot more people that are really excited and interested in this country thing for sure. I've been playing to some bigger audiences and getting a lot of requests to play more roots and country style shows and venues. So yeah, the audience, there's already a well-established audience and market out there for country music, even though I'm kind of pushing the limits of it certain ways. But yeah, definitely a growing interest.
So what do you mean when you say pushing the limits of it?
Well, I still kind of, I have my way of needing to do something to keep myself entertained. So there's, I think, pretty obvious sprinkles of psychedelia here and there, and a few different time signatures, like in Sunbeam, which Sunbeam I wrote and was thinking it was going to be like an acoustic lament. But I like I say in some of the stories of the record, is that my uncle Tucker, who was written for in his memory, was a huge rock and roller. So stuff like that, I kind of just allowed my musical spirit to meander off that well-defined genre jumping off point.
Were there other songs for your people? Like, were there songs that you abandoned or, you know, just didn't make the cut? Or was this always the collection of tracks that were going to be on this record?
Yeah, you know what? Every song, I put myself on a really tight schedule so I can get another release out. And then that way I can get Sarah and the band on our next Ghostkeeper record. So I was moving along fast and getting the songs completed with the ones that I really wanted to get done. So there wasn't really any extras or any throwaways. And I think maybe that's how this project will carry on moving forward. I'll just kind of approach things with a lot of intent so that I'm not experimenting and spending too much time.
You're already at work on a Ghostkeeper record. How easy was it to switch gears, songwriting wise?
It seemed pretty natural and easy for me. I really cherish what Sarah and I have built, and with our various collaborators, and specifically now with Ryan Bourne and Eric Hamlin, it's a creative artistic outlet that I've become to really need for my own spiritual purposes. And it was easy just to get back into it and carry on. So I'm really excited about this new record that Sarah and I have out. The first single's out on June 19th, Victory Pool Records. So a huge change.
Same home as your Shane Ghostkeeper stuff too.
That's right.
So they're fully on board with both tracks.
Yeah.
That's nice. You didn't have to find a second home for the non-country stuff. Before I let you go, Shane, I want to get you to pick a track off Songs for My People. And if you can give me a reason why you're picking it or maybe an anecdote about it, I'd love to hear that.
Let's do V Chill, because it was written for my son, Vital Chilowee Ghostkeeper, Sarah and I's firstborn. He's going to be 12 years old next on Sunday. And that was a special story for me to tell because, well, naturally, being the first son, my first child, it was such a, kind of scary, I have to admit. And although very exciting, but, you know, the whole process of birth that women go through is pretty heavy and scary and miraculous. So it was such a huge ordeal. And then when he was born, the doctor handed him to me first, but he didn't make a peep. And I was expecting this dramatic screaming, crying baby. And he was just like trying his hardest to open his eyes and look around and look at me. And it was sweet, but it seemed like an eternity went by, like even after the cord cutting, where he didn't make a peep. And then I was starting to think like, oh, well, if his voice doesn't work, then I guess we'll deal with that. And that's going to be a beautiful experience in its own. However, it was just a little bit of a worry for me. I was like, oh, wow, he has no voice. And then even later when I handed him off to his mother for a while, which seemed like maybe 10, 15 minutes went by, and he was just the most peaceful baby and not a peep, and starting to warm up to that idea, and is getting really sweet. I thought he was like the sweetest, most peaceful human being I'd ever witnessed. But then finally, I got asked to take him to put him down on this really cold, steely scale. Still no peep. But then finally the nurse came in to give him his first needle. And then that's why finally he let out a little roar and a little whimper. I was able to pick him up and felt so kind of relieved that his voice actually did work. He was just saving it up.
And you've been holding on to that that moment ever since, and were able to write a song about it.
Yeah, totally. And he's been using his voice pretty strongly ever since as well.
Well, I appreciate you using your voice and for taking time to share those stories. Shane, looking forward to seeing you at Folkfest, and thanks again for your time today.
You bet. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
So sweet, that baby BV, yeah, and VB Jill, yeah, cause he come here, he never make one peep, no. Yeah, he was saving his voice, I guess, yeah, saving up all his noise, for something deep. Watch them spread like flowers. Then one day he spoke like he summoned them grand folk. A prayer can come manifest, as a dream you choose. Yes, and when he speaks, the muskie keeps. His voice now, I guess. He's working up all his noise for something sweet. Yeah, yeah. You be humble, be grateful. You can't gauge your temperament in times of peace. Like the rumble of them thunder showers, you express your powers. Dedicate, celebrate, like the rain to
flowers. I'm Michael Elves, and you've been listening to a special podcast spotlighting Shane Ghostkeeper, who'll be performing on Sunday, July 14th at 1:30 p.m. at Shady Grove at the Winnipeg Folk Festival. To hear more featured artists, visit umfm.com, and be sure to visit winnipegfolkfestival.ca to get tickets to this great event running July 11th through 14th at Birds Hill Park.